Moncrief on News Talk.
Barbara and Declan are here.
Participating fulsomely. Is that the right word?
Fulsomely, yes. Is that the right word? So, yeah.
In the bitching.
Yeah.
There was a song about that, wasn't there?
Fulsome.
Fulsome City Jail Blues or something.
Oh, God.
Johnny Cash. That's a different Fulsome.
Prison Blues.
Yeah, Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's the place in San Francisco, isn't it? Yeah. Fulsome.
I don't know.
It's a prison, I think.
Yeah. I don't think it was in San Francisco. I think it was somewhere in the deep south.
Or Texas or something.
Yeah, San Francisco is the one on the island. What you call
Alcatraz.
It? Alcatraz.
Maybe that's like kind of confusing. Yeah. It is a prison though, isn't it?
There's another song about that.
Oh, well, like...
It's hard to get something to rhyme with Alcatraz, so there's not as many songs about it.
What was the song about that Alcatraz?
Pizazz.
Like a Home Sweet Pizazz Home.
Pizazz rhymes. It's a really great song called Alcatraz Pizazz.
Alcatraz Pizazz.
I swear to God, go to my
Instagram. You'll find it. It's been number one in the dark web for 10 weeks.
I think we should say we weren't drinking before we came in here.
We're totally playing Alcatraz Pizazz at the end of this. Right, I'm 33 years old. I've just started seeing a guy. He and I are from the same town, so we're well acquainted. It's safe to say he has a reputation with women when we were younger. However, so far, he has been nothing but a gentleman with me. He has been in regular contact, texting most nights, and he has really taken the lead in terms of organising and planning dates. He seems extremely keen, so I think everything is going well. My friends tell me I'm making a mistake by dating him, but I think you can't judge a lad on what he was like in his 20s. Are my friends right? Should I call it off? Or can a player change his ways?
This is an interesting one. It's great for this, presuming it's a woman, it's great for her that she has friends who seem to have her back and that they care. That's good. But I'm just wondering what's the evidence they have for their concern? Do you know? Like, she said that he was...
glibly, he shagged them all when he was younger.
Yeah. I was trying to read it. she said he was a player in his 20s. I mean, she's only 33 now, so I'm assuming he's around the same age. So how long has he been a player for, and when did he stop, and what exactly is he being accused of, and all that stuff? So we don't know any of that. But I think if everybody knows he was a player, it wasn't a secret. Mm. So therefore, I don't really see that as being a huge, big problem. I'd be much more worried about things that were underground and people didn't really know about.
Yeah.
But if he was kind of open about the fact that maybe he was a bit like a social butterfly.
Yes.
I wouldn't, you know, and if he's changed, well, then fine. So based on the fact that we don't have a lot of information, I would give him the benefit of the doubt. And yeah, I think people can change if they want to change. Mm. And we all know that men take longer to grow up than women. So, you know, maybe that's it. So carry on. As long as he keeps being as this woman describes him, I think he sounds grand, lad.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter that he's got a lot of miles on the clock or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, slut shaming somebody because they were like, you know, a jack the lad when they're a kid isn't
they were a kid
cool. Yeah,
they were young
in their 20s.
Yeah. I think that there's a little bit of kind of pearl clutchy and just having an opinion for the sake of it, having an opinion that goes on in groups. Oh, don't go near him, he's an awful, you know, shut up, take a seat on this one. I also think that with the whole point of the guy's behavior, as you pointed out there, everything was kind of out in the open. If everybody knew he was, you know, labeled a player, but he was just kind of going, yeah, this is where I'm at now, this is what I'm doing now, this is who I'm with right now, and it's all been very straightforward, and this is what I'm at. He's been honest the whole way through, you know, and as long as his honesty remains, you know, a core part of his interaction with this person, I think that she said, and if he's giving off vibes of somebody who has sowed their wild oats and now wants to kind of settle down, then she just happens to be the right person at the right time, you know. It's kind of, it's the timing thing.
Yeah. So don't be worrying about the friends. Don't just be jog along.
But I wonder, have they had a conversation about this?
Friends?
No, herself and your man.
Oh, right.
And she said to your man, you were, you know, what are all those notches in your bedpost kind of thing?
I always think those conversations are the highway to hell. I really do.
Yeah.
I just think you don't need to do that.
Absolutely. Like, if you asked a guy, you know, tell us about your past, she's going to lie.
Yeah.
You tell a woman about her past, she's going to lie. And if she does tell you the truth, you're going to think she's a terrible person altogether. So it's kind of like,
could you say in general terms you had a reputation when you were younger for,
You know, and then he'll go, did I like, hurt your feelings? What's
the point of that conversation?
Yeah, no
point.
Yeah,
like, there isn't. Yeah. And you're only going to maybe make him feel a bit like vulnerable or a bit kind of under siege. I wouldn't have that conversation. I think regardless of what way you are in a relationship, I don't think there's anything to be gained from going into old history like that.
Yeah.
Nothing.
You're dealing with opinions here and feelings. You're not dealing with facts anyway. Because the fact is that he wasn't in a relationship with you then. So his behaviour is
kind of... none of your business.
None of your business. Yeah.
Exactly.
And now that he is in a relationship with you, he does have a kind of a fiduciary duty with you.
Yeah.
And so that's from that point
he
of view.
He has a what?
Like a fiduciary. Like
fiduciary. As a director of
he has
house.
An obligation. He has
what
like
was
a
the
kind
word
of
you used?
Fiduciary.
Yeah. It's kind of a legal
word?
Yeah, it's a legal term.
Oh,
yeah.
Is it? Oh, yeah. No wonder I'd never heard of it then.
But at the same time, they're from a town, right? And her friends have filled her head with this poison.
Yeah, that's the
so
problem.
So she's walking down the street with your man. And every time a woman says hello to him, she's going, oh, oh, oh. They've put it in her head now. And that's, if you're in a, like, it's one thing if, you know, they were living in Cork or something and they weren't from Cork. But now it seems like, you know.
Now, she hasn't said, and this is, I don't want to be sexist here, but she hasn't said whether it's girlfriends or a mixed group of friends that have been warning her about this guy.
Okay.
Because I always think, and I mean, she's still, I know she said she's 33. To me, that's still pretty young.
Mm.
And, you know, with your girlfriends, you always prefer to have your friend back in the gang with the friends rather than falling in love with somebody who's going to take them off.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't really take their motives, shall we say, are a little bit cloudy.
Okay.
Maybe.
Right.
So, I also think that when it comes to that exact dynamic where you've got a group of friends and then each of the friends or just one or two of the friends have, you know, somebody that they're in a relationship with, the view that they have of that person they're in the relationship will never be the actual truth. There's always a certain amount of presentation and a certain amount of kind of spin or nonsense that goes around in the way those people view that person. I see with my own relationship that my husband, the way that they see him is completely different to what he's like. Not necessarily for the better. I just mean that certain instances, whatever their instance of their interactions are, become the sum total of their knowledge of that person.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Therefore, from that basis, they make a bit like a kind of
narrative.
An avatar of who the person is rather than the actual complete, complex, nuanced person.
I also think, like, what are they trying to protect her from? Like, you know, I mean,
they're
it's
not,
all
they're
so
just
vague.
Having an opinion.
So, yeah,
it's just pearl clutching.
Yeah.
Oh, don't go near Tommy. Yeah. I know he's good looking and gorgeous.
This woman is 33. Like, she's, you know, she's a grown woman who can make up her own mind. And if she says that he's been, you know, been doing well, texting most nights, taking the lead in terms of organising and planning dates and is extremely keen, grant, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Carry on until that stops being the case. Carry on.
Yeah.
Tell your friends to mind their own business now and jog along.
Suggest a threesome with you, him and your hottest friend. If he jumps at the chance, dump him. Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't see that trap coming. if they're from the same town, how come she doesn't know his history? I don't know. Is there a score chart that they keep in towns? Or
but
in
she
Ireland?
Does know his history, doesn't she?
Yeah. Well, ish.
But again, that's all just reputation. How much of that is actual real and not? Nobody knows.
It's like, oh, you remember when we were 16?
Well, exactly. Yeah. It could be that. You know,
you're all bragging about stuff that may or may not have happened.
You might have had a lucky summer once.
Exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
That was it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yep. Yeah.
The 33-year-old's clock's ticking. Just saying. No, you're not just saying.
He just said it.
Yeah. She knows what she's getting into. Surely she knows how to tread carefully, says Anya. One would have thought so, yeah.
That's it.
Right. This is a far more serious issue.
It is. It's very serious.
We have a huge issue on our cul-de-sac when it comes to parking.
Oh, dear.
Our house was built in the 1970s and there's one parking space per house on the road. The parking spots are not assigned and it tends to work on a first-come, first-served basis. For the last 30 years, we haven't had an issue with parking until recently. When the neighbour's kids started to drive and come home to visit, the oldest kids are away at college midweek, so there's no issue when it comes to parking. However, at the weekend, when they come home to get the bed sheets washed and they get a bag full of cooked dinners, they take up all of the parking spaces. As a result, my husband and I often have no place to park our car, particularly on a Friday night. I've tried to reason with my neighbours, but she told me there's no parking entitlements round here and that she can't tell her children that they can't park outside their own home. I've contacted the council, who've told me there is nothing they can do. I really need some help. How can I ensure that we have a parking space outside our house? Or how do I end this standoff with the neighbours? This is only going to get worse when the younger kids learn how to drive.
Oh, God.
I love how this whole thing is framed. God, obviously, the whole parking thing is a very widespread problem. But the way that this writer kind of sets it originally in the 1970s, thanks to the architects and town planners of the 70s, where they only gave them one parking space. Yeah. But obviously, nowadays, now everybody has at least four SUVs per household. But town planners want to build estates where there are no parking, by the way. They have this plan for where I live, where they're having no parking at all. So it's kind of, okay, kids, that doesn't seem to add up. So obviously what's happening is, as we move towards this future kind of carless society where we're all living in environmental bliss with the universe, but without cars. In the meantime, we've got this scenario where people have more cars than they have spaces, and it'll kind of neighbourly wars are breaking out all the time. It happens around where I live all the time. Some suburbs are more blessed with wider roads, but even on my mum and dad's road, which when I was a kid
was a big road,
used to feel like, you know, you could put four tennis courts across the width of the road. Now the one car parks outside one side and the other, and the gap to get down is like almost impossible. So yes, problems with car parking, nightmare.
Abound.
For these people, though, they're coming at it kind of completely aggressively, like somebody has stolen something from them that's their kind of birthright. Whereas, as they've by now probably realised from interacting with the council, they don't have any rights there. It's kind of like you have to negotiate a system that works for you and your neighbours, or you just deal with the scenario as it arises. A lot of the kind of inner suburbs like Ranelagh and Rathmines or whatever have car parking you have to pay for car parking, so that kind of filters out a lot of the nonsense that people are you know, they have to work out the problem in advance if they don't have their own driveways in which to park a car. So from this scenario, I kind of go, like, you come running at your neighbours aggressive at them because they have children who have cars, when you go, and now the younger kids might have minis and whatever else, and you're all worried about it. But you're not negotiating with your neighbours in a way that will actually work for them. They basically have said no. So they only have a leg to stand on.
It's very interesting. I agree with everything you've said. And I also think it's very funny what struck me when he was talking about, because again, as you say, it's the way this guy has framed it. And there's a kind of, he sounds like he's quite bitter about all of this. And the way he talks about the grown up kids next door coming home with their bag fulls of washing and getting bag fulls of dinners.
It's the entitlement.
Entitlement of it. I hate to have to tell him that once those kids finish college, they'll probably be back home permanently with their cars.
And the cars will get bigger.
Problem, living in the cars.
A problem that is only at the weekend may actually get bigger. But it's exactly what you said. Like, you don't have a right. You don't own the road outside your house, regardless of how many cars you have or how small your driveway is, or if you have a driveway or you don't have a driveway. You do not own the space outside your house. Mm. So you don't have any right to it. So I don't know what they want. I don't know what they want, what they think is should be done here. I mean, obviously, the people who live next door, their kids come home, they park outside because they get there before you do. I presume there's places he can park. He may have to walk a few metres, but I'm sure he can park further down the road around the corner or somewhere like that, which is annoying a little bit. Yeah, I get that. But that's all it is.
Well, in some places there in Dublin, that would not be the case. There would be like, you'd have a certain, I'm talking about my own street, where if you can't park, if a load of people come and park outside our houses, there is literally nowhere to park your car.
Because it's a busy road outside.
Because it's a busy road and there's no parking.
So doesn't the same argument apply to the weekend kids visiting? They're more able to walk around the corner.
Oh, they
so
are,
why don't
yeah,
they
presume.
Walk? Yes, they have a bit of consideration.
Absolutely.
For
I mean, if they're That's if the next door neighbours were kind of more neighbourly, they would probably suggest to their kids, pull up outside, bring in your washing, and then move your car and stick it down the road a little bit so that Fred and Nancy next door can park outside their house because they've been there for 30 years, which means they're probably in their 60s.
Well, you know they're not going to do that.
But I think he's shot himself in the foot by his kind of aggressive Well, yeah. But the tone of this sounds aggressive. Yes, yeah.
But also
said,
coming to them as if he has a legitimate complaint, as opposed to
he'd have been better off hobbling up the road. Do you know what I mean? Carrying a load of shopping and in a sweat, so that maybe them looking out the window could go, "Oh, that's a bit much." But there's nothing he can do, and the sooner he gets over that and accepts that, that's it. There's no magic bullet that we can tell him that's going to sort out his car parking.
The thing that I've seen that works the best is if the neighbours can all kind of agree, like a system. Like, you can't account for interlopers who are coming from outside of your kind of little group, because if it's spaces, parking spaces, people can use them, as you pointed out. But if you can kind of agree amongst yourselves that your space outside your house is going to be where you're going to put your car and they're going to put, that works better. And maybe that's the best way to frame it when speaking to the neighbours. Not that you have this God-given, you know, birthright to the land outside
and
your house.
If you are incapacitated in some way, or, you know, you're not able to walk.
Well, often
any
the
distance,
council will
they might
set
intervene.
Out a space.
But obviously this isn't the case here. And, you know, it will move on. Do you know what I mean? Like, eventually. Not soon.
Maybe not.
I don't think it will, though.
Yeah, no, you can see in 20 years when the ambulance comes through, your man will have no place to park because the kids are visiting. Appropriate a couple of traffic cones and use them to reserve your place.
But you're not allowed to do that. Somebody can move them.
Oh, people do that all the time.
You know, I know, but people can also move them. Quite and say, this is no legitimacy. Can. Like, away you go.
My neighbour, who was no car, bought a banger and parked it permanently outside her house just because.
Oh,
my
dear
God.
People are very strange.
Yeah, we've had the same issue in our road. Angry little fella reckons because his driveway is only big enough for little Tyke's car, he now owns the entire road and parks on corners, footpaths, etc. to make it difficult for everyone else to use the road. We are having similar issues with our neighbour. We have three cars. Me, my partner and daughter next door have four cars. His, hers and two daughters. We just make a game of it as to who parks where and is very light-hearted. Life's too short to argue over such trivial matters.
He's a wise person.
David says, tell the man with the parking space to start a rumour that the space outside his house causes genital warts. Works every time. Prove that's science. That's proven to work absolutely every time. My girlfriend and I were due to go travelling around Southeast Asia at the end of this month with another couple. Let's call them Carl and Jenny. Hello to Carl and Jenny. Unfortunately, Jenny was admitted to hospital this week following a seizure, and they've been running tests on her. So far, they don't know what happened or what caused the seizure. Carl said he will postpone the trip, but the way he is talking, it's as if he expects us to do the same. Obviously, I'm hoping that Jenny will be okay to come on the trip, but if she is not, are we bad guys for going anyway? We've spent the guts of 10 grand on flights and accommodation. I really don't want that to go to waste.
First of all, sorry to hear about Jenny. A seizure that comes at you out of the blue is extremely scary, and she may not get a diagnosis for a little while yet. I have some experience of this. This happened to my daughter. And so I think it's wise probably for Jenny and Cahill to perhaps postpone the trip, because until she knows what it caused the seizure, she's probably as well off.
Yeah,
sticking close to base. And as I said, that may take a little bit of time. It also, I'm sure Cahill is worried about Jenny because, you know, if I don't know if he was there when she had the seizure, but it's quite a scary thing to witness.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, and perhaps he's not being as careful of his words or as articulate as he would normally be. And that's why the other two are picking up the fact that they think he thinks they should cancel as well, because that may not be the case at all. I think his focus is probably now on Jenny and not really. The trip has probably receded into the background for them, other than the fact that they are probably, I would imagine, going to cancel it. So I would say to you, to this person who wrote in, obviously the two of you, definitely go. There's no point y'all staying at home. That's of no benefit to anybody, including Cahill and Jenny. So you go ahead. Hopefully Jenny will get, if there is a diagnosis, or maybe it was just a one-off, I don't know, but Jenny will get back on her feet and they can arrange their own trip whenever that's appropriate. But the final point I would like to make, and I sound like their mammy, is I hope you have travel insurance. Because if you have travel insurance and you do decide to cancel, that should cover it if it's one of the parties who's suddenly been taken ill out of the blue. But either way, you should have travel insurance anyway. And if you don't have it, go and get it. And that's the end of the lecture from me.
But Cahill and Jenny, it seems, will have serious hump, or particularly Cahill, if if the other couple go without them.
Well, I don't know, Willie. Like, I just think maybe he's not being as effusive, perhaps, in his communication as normally.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's a worry if somebody you love has a seizure and is in hospital having tests. I'd say the trip has receded in his mind quite a distance.
But it depends on the way the trip came together. Like, if the trip came together, like four people sitting around the pub going, wouldn't it be great if we all went to Bali and they all planned it together and this is the way we're, you know. But if it's just, you know, if it's just two kind of semi-independent couples who are deciding to go at the same time, do you know what I mean? But there's a difference. It depends on how well they know each other and what they all expected from the trip. But I do think that even with the more closely knit plan, that if something happens that removes one person or even the couple away from the thing, I think they're still fine to go on the trip. I think that, you know, a little conversation just to clarify that would be kind of, but I think, look, as you and I know, life changes, things happen quite easily that just push you off course. Delaying things for some future possible payouts is never a good idea. So do it now.
Should they wait for a couple of weeks before they bring it up again? Seeing it's at the end of this month. Maybe in a couple of weeks' time, he'll have kind of realised it's not going
to
happen.
I think they need to make a decision now. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't wait. I mean, I would, if you need to clarify the communication, by all means, I think, you know, you need to talk to Cathal and just say, look, I hope you don't mind. We're probably going to go ahead because we've spent all the money and we've put things in place and we've booked holidays from work and we hope Jenny's okay, and we'll see you when you get back. And I would imagine Cathal will be grand with that.
Because it's not like it's like, oh, the person who you're leaving behind is your sister or somebody really. Because it's just the whole nature, the whole tone of this letter suggests there's a certain remove from them.
I think it's mainly guilt. They're feeling a bit guilty.
Cathal
and Jenny are in the middle of this maelstrom and they're kind of going, well, we're off to Bali now on our holidays. But that's fine. That's life.
Holiday of a lifetime.
So I think, no, go.
Yeah. Don't send them pictures, though. Well, somebody says this could be actually the case. I bet the problem with the holiday couple is the no tone text. One of these situations where a live chat or phone call,
that's very true,
would probably be best.
As I say, give him a bit of slack. You know, he's probably worried and concerned. That's his main thing, is how Jenny is. And I think, you know, everything else is probably not that important to him right now. But and for that reason as well,
I think people get
on
into their feelings about the clarification. They get worried because they feel guilty. Once the conversation happens and I think it'll go by quite smoothly
and then you'll
be back on track.
Jenny and Cathal hopefully will rearrange the trip when everything is clearer and more in control.
I hope you can help me. I'm a 40-year-old mother of two boys. My husband and I only met when we were 36. We got married quite quickly. We had the boys, 3 and 1. We always said we'd like 2 or 3 children. My husband always made it very clear that he wanted a son. Now that we had the two boys, he's saying that he doesn't want to have a third child. I'd like a third child, boy or girl, but he's adamant now that he doesn't want any more. I spoke to a few of my friends and they told me to stop taking the contraceptive pill and let nature take its course. I feel that's quite sneaky, but my husband has also blindsided me. I can't help but think that if we had two girls, he'd be up for having a third child. What should I do?
Yikes. Well, the first thing I would say is that your friend's advice is shocking. Shocking.
But I know people who've done that.
And I think in the past that kind of stuff might have been considered a little bit more tongue in cheek than it's viewed now. Nowadays, I see that as a consent issue. I see it like, you know, when it comes to having a child, both parties should know what's happening. You know, that seems a kind of basic aspect of it. I think maybe at the beginning of your relationship, you had an idea of like 3 children or whatever. And that was kind of, you know, on paper agreed with. But people are allowed to kind of review stuff as it happens for whatever reason. I don't know exactly why your husband is saying to you that he doesn't want a third child, but presumably
because he's had 2 already. Well, no, that's a good reason.
Exactly. But
he's broken, tired.
Yeah, exactly. And so his reasons and her reason for wanting the third one are different, and they're clashing here. And it's like one of those relationship problems for which they may never be a compromise. They may never be. Or there may never be a consensus, like an agreement made, because one party will always feel that they didn't get their way.
Yeah.
And I think in this instance, I think that, it, you know, it's either going to break the relationship or a new way of handling it has to happen. And maybe he can be brought around by a conversation. I don't think so.
Life was much simpler when the Catholic Church was in charge of the contraception.
When a priest told you how many children to have.
Yeah, and tried
to marry
the
trad wife.
The rhythm method and all that kind of stuff, which was bound
to go
wrong.
Rock solid contraceptive method,
exactly.
That was,
so life was simpler back then. I agree with you. I mean, the friend's advice is awful. And I also really don't think that your husband has blindsided you. I think he changed his mind. And I think we're all entitled to change our mind. You don't know what one child feels like till you have it, or two children until you have it. So he's now said, I have two children and I'm game ball with that and I don't want another one. And I think he's entitled to change his mind, and he's been honest about it. But equally, I understand her desire, which I think for a woman very often is kind of a visceral, very deeply instinctive kind of drive to get pregnant and to have another baby. It's the baby thing that you think of. It's like a cat. You know when you have cats and you think, oh, I'd love a kitten. And then you forget, like, they're only kittens for 5 minutes and then they're a cat.
And they hate you.
Yeah. So
what do you think about the bit about the gender thing, about that side of stuff? Because, I mean, I think that's a...
Well, she said she doesn't care whether it's...
Oh, no, but if he didn't have a son yet, he'd be going for a third.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, you know, maybe. But the other thing I was going to say is that I know from my personal experience and from some friends of mine, when you have a baby, around about the time that baby turns one, you get a kind of another rush of being really broody, because you can, you know, this baby now is starting to move into the kind of toddler thing, and you're kind of like, oh, I miss the baby and I want another baby, and you get quite broody. Sometimes, you know, if you just don't act on that, now I know you're 40 and I know there's clock and all the rest of it, but if you don't act that, you may find that in another year you'll be like, no, you know what? That was grand. Yeah. I'm fine. I actually am glad we don't have another baby. So, I would say you can't go ahead without your husband's agreement anyway.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, but I think this urge may lift in a couple of months.
That's a really good way to frame it, though, is to actually kind of evaluate her own part in this thing, that her urges or her desires are kind of her own thing that she's bringing.
Yeah.
For I'm not judging them. I'm just saying that's some way of analysing that she can kind of maybe understand it from that perspective.
It's quite irrational. I mean, you know, it is quite irrational, and it is.
But
something
don't do something irrational like getting a sneaky pregnancy, because
that's a terrible idea. Do not do that. Yeah. That is an awful idea. You can't be doing that.
Okay, Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.